Hey, this is Kyle Eidelman from Southeast Christian Church, and I want to thank you for listening to the message today. As we open up the scriptures together, I pray that this message inspires you, challenges you, and is the right word at just the right time in your life. Enjoy the message.
Has there ever been a story that you heard, or maybe from a book you read, and you just thought to yourself, that should be a movie? Like, somebody should put that on the big screen. There are, frankly, quite a few stories in the Old Testament that I would say fall under that category. Like, they're just pretty compelling stories. But one book of the Bible that I would put towards the top of that list of stories that should be a movie would be the book of Esther. In fact, if you read the book of Esther, it reads a little bit like a screenplay. There's three acts and different scenes, and there's characters and character development that takes place. And I will say, if you turned the book of Esther into a movie, I'm not sure what kind of rating it would get, frankly, because there's some stuff in there, right? Like, there's violence, and there's political scandal, and there are wild parties, and there's some scenes in the book of Esther you wouldn't want to watch if your mom was in the room. It's that kind of a story. And God is never mentioned in the book. Never brought up, never referenced, never even acknowledged. And so maybe Hollywood would love the movie. It just seems like it's an unusual book to read in the Bible. It's an unusual story to read in the Bible. It doesn't even mention God. And we're gonna spend the next 3 weeks studying this book of the Bible called Esther. And we're gonna call this series, we're gonna call this movie, In the Shadows. More on that in a little bit, but let's start with Act 1, Scene 1. It takes place in a royal palace. If you can picture this palace, and inside this palace is a royal party. And we are introduced to a king. His name is King Xerxes, the king of Persia, first character we meet in this story. King Xerxes, for some of you, if this helps, he's the evil king portrayed in the movie 300. Xerxes reigned in Persia from 485 to 465 BC. So 465 years before Jesus was born. His kingdom extended from India in the east all the way to Ethiopia in the north. So this is a man who has lots of power. In fact, the Persians ran the show during this time. The Greeks were up and coming, but King Xerxes was the most powerful man on the planet. And so we need someone in this movie we're making out of this story to play the part of King Xerxes. Scholars tell us he was in his 40s. We're gonna see as we learn a little bit about him. He was distinguished, but also a little crazy. He was at times cruel, but it could also be tender, so kind of this complicated character. And I'm thinking that we cast Joaquin Phoenix in our movie as King Xerxes, if that helps you kind of think of this character, put a face with it as we go through this story. So In the Shadows, starring Joaquin Phoenix as King Xerxes. And here's what I can tell you about King Xerxes, is King Xerxes loved a good time. A good time for a long time is kind of his motto when we first meet him. In the third year of his reign, he throws a huge party and he invites military commanders and advisors and political leaders. I don't know about the longest party you've ever been to. Well, let's just do this. By show of hands, okay, how many of you did not make it to midnight on New Year's Eve? Let's just raise your hand, just be proud if that's you. Okay. Yeah, so you're lightweights, because King Xerxes, when he throws a party, Esther chapter 1 verse 4 says he throws his party for a full 180 days. Or some of you would call it freshman year, right? Like, it's a 6 month party. What do you do at the end of a 6 month party where you'd think you would crash for like 10 or 12 weeks trying to recover from that, but not King Xerxes. King Xerxes is like, that was an epic party. How should we celebrate that celebration? And somebody said, how about we throw a party? And he's like, nailed it. And so they throw a party to celebrate the party. So after 180 days of a party, they throw a 7 day party for that party. Esther chapter 1, verse 7 and 8 talks about that party. It says, wine was served in goblets of gold, each one different from the other, and the royal wine was abundant. In keeping with the king's liberality, lots of wine, but by the king's command, each guest was allowed to drink in his own way. Drink whatever you want, as much as you want. For the king instructed all the wine stewards to serve each man what he wished. And after 187 days of partying, King Xerxes, you'll never believe this, was drunk. And it turns out that he makes a decision under the influence of alcohol that I'm not sure he would have made had he been sober. He starts thinking about his queen. And he decides it would be a good idea to call her to do a dance in front of all of his drunk friends. So, verse 10 and 11. On the seventh day, when King Xerxes was, quote, in high spirits from wine, he commanded the seven eunuchs who served him to bring before him Queen Vashti wearing her royal crown in order to, here's the word, display her. To display her beauty to the people and nobles, for she was lovely to look at. And so he's had a little too much to drink. He wants to show his wife off. You get the vibe that it's really more objectification. He wants to put her on display. It's like he's at an FFA event and this is his favorite heifer. That's kind of the energy King Xerxes is putting off. And so he calls for his wife. And so in the movie, we have this part of Queen Vashti. We're not told a lot about her, but we are told that she's beautiful. Now, don't mistake her beauty for weakness, because this is a beautiful woman, but this is a strong woman. And so I was needing to cast a beautiful woman in this role, and I decided on letting my wife choose. So she chose Gal Gadot, also known as Wonder Woman, for this role. It's a good, solid choice, beautiful, strong. And when King Xerxes demands that Wonder Woman come and do a dance for his drunk friends, that went about as well as you would expect. Verse 12, but when the attendants delivered the king's command, Queen Vashti refused to come. That's all we really know about her. But let's give it up for Queen Vashti, because that is not nothing. She's like, no, I'm not gonna be put on display like that. King Xerxes wasn't happy about this. Verse 12, then the king became furious and burned with anger. And so he gets his advisors together. Verse 15, according to the law, King Xerxes says, what must be done to Queen Vashti? She hasn't obeyed the command of King Xerxes that the eunuchs have taken to her. And we learn a few things about King Xerxes. One, he refers to himself in the third person. Ladies, always red flag. Like, if you're going out with somebody and they start talking about themselves in the third person, you probably should just run away. The other thing we learn about King Xerxes is that he has this thing that people in power, specifically men in power, often can have. That is, they don't like to be told no. They have an issue with somebody questioning their authority, and that's what happens to King Xerxes, and he's not having it, and he tells his advisors, what do we do about this? And the advisors say, verse 17, 18, the queen's conduct will become known to all the women, and so they will despise their husbands. And they'll say, King Xerxes commanded Queen Vashti to be brought before him, but she would not come. Hey, if the queen can treat the king this way, then we can treat our husbands this way. This very day, they say, the Persian and Median women of the nobility who've heard about the queen's conduct will respond to all the king's nobles in the same way. There will be no end of disrespect and discord. You need to do something about this. You need to make an example out of her. They don't encourage him to respond in humility, self-awareness. Like a lot of men, he listens to a group of friends who are in no position to give relationship advice. And Xerxes decides to make an example of Queen Vashti, and he banishes her from the kingdom. And so now we have, in our story, a king without a queen. And that's the end of Act 1, Scene 1 of In the Shadows. You've got this power-tripping king who seems to be drunk a lot, and you've got this beautiful queen who's strong, has a mind of her own, and we see what happens in the story when she opposes the king. One thing we haven't got so far in the story is God. As mentioned, he's one character we don't need to cast in the story. Sorry, Morgan Freeman, there's no part for you to play here. Like, God doesn't show up. God's never mentioned. God's never referenced. God's not acknowledged in the entire book of the Bible. It's the only book of the Bible where God isn't mentioned. Doesn't seem to have a role, but there is a reason why we are calling this In the Shadows, and that is because sometimes when God's presence isn't obvious, his power is. Just because you can't see him doesn't mean that he's not at work in your life and in what's happening around us in the world. The poet James Russell Lowell wrote these words, behind the dim unknown stands God in the shadows, keeping watch over his own. God is in the shadows, He's keeping watch over his own. And as we study this story, you will begin to see God is at work. He's in the shadows. And it might feel in this story, and might feel in your story, like he isn't present. It might seem like he isn't paying attention. You might think he isn't concerned, but what we discover is God is moving kings and queens like pawns on a chessboard to accomplish his purpose. And just because you don't see it doesn't mean he isn't working. And just because you don't feel it doesn't mean he isn't working. He's always working. And as we start this new year, I want to say it to you who may have forgotten, God has not forgotten you. God has not forgotten you. He will never leave you. He will never forsake you. He may seem silent for a while, and maybe because of that, you haven't been praying much. It doesn't seem like it's making much difference in your life, but what if, listen, what if God is working in the shadows in ways you just can't see right now? What if he has for you something different than what you had for you? Will you trust him? What if his timing is different than your timing? What if you're right about the what, but you're wrong about the when? And God's at work, and you just don't see it. You just don't feel it. Proverbs 19, verse 21 is one of my favorite proverbs. And it's because this proverb, depending on where my faith is at, is either really encouraging or really exasperating. Proverbs 19, 21 says that we make our plans, but the purposes of the Lord prevail. Now that to you might be exasperating if you've got your plans and God isn't acting according to your plans. But maybe you've made your plans and things haven't gone the way you hoped they would. They haven't unfolded how you thought they might. Are you encouraged by the fact that even though you've made plans, the purposes of God have not been thwarted? Like the purposes of God prevail. And there are lots of people in this room who would testify to the God who is in the shadows keeping watch over his own. You've had these moments in your life where you couldn't see it, you couldn't feel it, and from where you sat, it seemed that he was absent, and then in hindsight, you're like, oh, I just didn't know. A few years ago, I was counseling a couple whose marriage was falling apart. The husband had lost his job. They were facing foreclosure, barely speaking to each other. Now, truthfully, their marriage had been in trouble long before he lost his job, but the job seemed to be what was gonna be the final straw. The wife had been praying for years, God, do something to save my marriage. Do something to heal this between us. And it didn't just seem that God wasn't answering her prayer when her husband lost his job. It seemed like God was doing the opposite of what she had been praying for. There was more stress and more pressure, and things had become even darker than they were. But then something unexpected happened. The husband's job loss led him to start a small business from their garage just to make a little extra money. It's something he had dreamed about doing but didn't have the time or maybe even the courage to pursue it. And his wife saw how hard he was working, saw his passion, and she started helping with the books, and slowly they just began talking again. And today their business employs 15 people. Their marriage is stronger than ever. They serve in our marriage ministry. And looking back, they would just say, it didn't seem like it in a moment. It felt like this was the greatest moment of darkness, but what we discovered was God was in the shadows, keeping watch over his own. I remember praying for a couple who couldn't have children. They tried everything, fertility treatments, specialists, you name it. And year after year, just ended in disappointment. A lot of you understand what this is like. It's just exhausting, and it left them feeling bitter and questioning God's plan and God's sovereignty in their lives. Eventually, they started fostering, initially just to kind of fill this void while they were trying to have a baby of their own. And the first placement was two siblings who had experienced severe trauma. And these new foster parents, they were overwhelmed at first because the kids had so many needs and there was so much hurt to work through. But slowly and day by day, they discovered something. They discovered that they had a gift for helping traumatized kids feel safe and loved and giving them a place to heal. Today, they've adopted those two siblings and they help run a support group for foster families. The wife recently said, "We spent years asking God for a baby and he gave us something we never knew we wanted, a ministry to forgotten children." And here's the point. God was in the shadows turning their unmet expectations into unexpected purpose. Yeah. Unmet expectations into unexpected purpose. I was having lunch with a friend of mine who this is not long ago, who had lost his job. And because of that, he had to sell their family's dream house. This was their forever home. Had to sell their home. They moved into a condo. And he just confessed to me how much he was struggling with the adjustments and how they were having trouble seeing God's plan and all of this. And they thought things were going a certain direction. And I tried to encourage him. I tried to pray for him. And after lunch, we were going out to our car. So we walk out of the restaurant, go into our car separately, and he says to me as a bit of an afterthought while we're walking away from each other, he says, "Hey, by the way, my new neighbor in that condo is coming to church with me this weekend, so say a prayer for that." And I thought, there it is. Because I know my friend well enough to know that he would gladly trade his dream home for the salvation of the family in the condo next to him. God working in the shadows to accomplish his purpose. Romans 8:28 says, we studied this last year, it says, "And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purpose." I believe he's gonna do that in your life in 2025, because there are gonna be people this year that you haven't met. There are gonna be circumstances that you aren't even aware of. There'll be situations that you're gonna face. And I'll just tell you that God will not be absent. And even if you don't feel his presence, do not doubt his power. My uncle used to build and repair grandfather clocks. And he kind of did it as a hobby, a bit of a side gig. And one time I was in his shop, he was showing me, it was just, you know, all kinds of grandfather clocks that people had sent to him to repair, right? And some of them were heirlooms. They'd been around for decades, 60, 70 years. Hadn't worked in a long time. And I was asking him about the process of fixing a grandfather clock, and he said, "Well, there's really just one factor." He said, "I can fix any of these clocks. It just comes down to one factor. Have they given me all the pieces? If I've got all the pieces, I can fix the clock, but I don't know, and they don't always know. Have they given me all the pieces? I just gotta have all the pieces, and I can fix it." And this is how God is. Like, we are invited here, as we start 2025, to just give him the pieces. And some of the most broken pieces, or some of the pieces that don't feel that significant to us, or some of the pieces that we wanna hold on to for ourselves, we release it. And we say, "God, do your work in me, do your work through me. Here are all the pieces." And maybe that's a relationship in your life that's become fractured and broken. And you've tried to repair it on your own, or maybe you hoped it would heal naturally, but it hasn't. And things are harder this year than they were last year. And you're tempted to maybe just give up on it. I just ask you to see what you're holding. And maybe you're holding on to some pride. Or maybe you're holding on to bitterness and resentment that, quite frankly, is well deserved. What would it look like if you just began through prayer to release those things to God? Say, "God, here are the pieces. Can you do something with this?" There's just a lot of areas in our life where we often feel disappointment and disillusioned, but the invitation is, "God, here are the pieces. Will you work?" Act 1, scene 2 of our movie. If scene 1 was all about this ungodly party, then scene 2 is really about this unexpected person. So Queen Vashti is banished from the kingdom. And then 4 years pass when we pick up on scene 2, and King Xerxes is beginning to miss Wonder Woman. Like, he's beginning to think maybe that was a bad idea. And I should say, he's been humbled a few times by now. The Greeks are starting to gain in some power with the Persians, and he's feeling a little depressed and discouraged. And so his advisors suggest something as a way to get his spirits up. They're like, why don't we do the first season of The Bachelor? We'll have this huge beauty pageant. We'll invite women from all over the kingdom, and they'll go through this competition, and at the end of it, you choose which one you want to be the new queen. And the king's like, "Okay, that sounds like a good idea. Let's do that." And so they have this huge beauty pageant, and a Jewish man named Mordecai enters his young cousin named Esther. She doesn't enter herself into this. She's entered into it by her cousin Mordecai. Esther chapter 2, verse 7. Mordecai had a cousin named Hadassah, whom he had brought up because she had neither father nor mother. She was an orphan living in a foreign land. This girl, who was also known as Esther, the Bible says was lovely in form and features, and Mordecai had taken her as his own daughter when her mom and dad died. And so now we need to cast the part of Mordecai. I thought this part was pretty easy to cast because as we read about Mordecai, he's eager, kind of has this childlike eagerness about him, but he's also very sincere. He's a bit quirky, but he's also shrewd. And so here's who we're gonna go with for cousin Mordecai. A little Jeff Goldblum for Mordecai. And Mordecai hears about this beauty pageant, and he has this beautiful cousin who he's raised as his daughter. She's known as Esther. And the Bible says she was beautiful. Our preaching team came up with a few options for who to play the part of Esther. They thought maybe Zendaya from Spider-Man, but then they decided on Naomi Scott from the movie Aladdin. So Naomi Scott will play the part of Esther. And if you and I were to look at Esther, we would almost immediately rule her out as someone God would use in a dramatic way. She had all kinds of strikes against her, but I'll just give you three. Strike one, she was Jewish, living in exile in this foreign land. The Jews were conquered foreigners, forced to live in the country. Because she was Jewish living in this land, that means she had no rights, she had no power, she had no position, no esteem, no wealth, nothing. Strike one. Strike number two, she's a woman. And in those times, women were not treated with much respect or given much power. That's still true in the Middle East today, but in that culture, especially at that time, you would never think a woman could be used in a way that would change the history of the world, preserve the messianic line so that Jesus could be born. Strike two. Strike three, she was an orphan. Esther didn't have a mom and dad to look after her, to raise her up. She didn't have that kind of security and those kinds of examples. And we don't know what happened to her mom and dad, but because they were exiles living in this land, brutal land, you can imagine that their death would have been traumatic. And graciously, when she had nowhere to go and no one to take care of her, her cousin Mordecai adopted her as his own. But Esther is this foreign orphan girl living in Persia. Strike three. So she's not what you would call, you know, well-positioned to be a person of impact. But this is one of the ways that God moves in the shadows. He will use the least likely people to accomplish his greatest purposes. And we say it often around here, but let's say it again. God can use anyone to do anything, anywhere he wants. And we're told that Esther is beautiful, so Mordecai enters his cousin Esther into this beauty pageant, and then two things happen that seem to clearly be outside of what God's will would have been. So in this story about God's will unfolding, you have two things happen that seem to be contrary to what God's expressed will would have been. Number one, we find out that Esther hid her nationality. She was a Hadassah, but she goes by Esther, and she's hiding her faith in the one true God. And God, in his love for his people, had forbidden Israelites from marrying non-Israelites because it leads to spiritual compromise. Like, that was an expressed thing that God said. And so by Esther being in this pageant to marry the king, she's in this pageant to marry the most non-Israelite of all the non-Israelites. Clearly not part of God's will. Second thing we know about Esther is that she compromises sexually, but I'm gonna word that a little bit different. She was compromised sexually. There's no indication that she had any real choice in any of this, right? Like, there's not really any reason to assume that she had a lot of power in making any of these decisions. They were likely made for her. But whatever the case, whether she compromised sexually or she was compromised sexually, it wouldn't be part of God's will for her. But here's what we're encouraged by. God can use you and bless you no matter what you've done and no matter what's been done to you. It's a big part of what we studied going through Romans, that he is the redeemer. It's my favorite thing about God, that he can redeem anything. And that's not to minimize anything you've done, and it's not to minimize anything that's been done to you. Like, the pain is real, I'm not saying it isn't. Like, the guilt and regret is heavy, but it is to realize that God can do whatever he wants. God can redeem and restore and rebuild. There are no boundaries to his grace. There are no limits to his love. There's nothing that he cannot turn for the good. And if he did it for Esther, and if he's done it for me, he could do that for you too. No matter what position you find yourself in or how many strikes you have against you. Chapter 2, verse 12. Before a girl's turn came to go into King Xerxes, she had to complete 12 months of beauty treatments prescribed for the women, 6 months of oil and myrrh, and 6 with perfumes and cosmetics. She takes 12 months to get ready. You think your wife takes a long time to get ready? 12 months she's getting ready to go in and meet King Xerxes. And I just want you to think, though, for a moment about what that would have been like for this young orphan girl in a foreign land. How scary that would have been. 12 months of insecurity, 12 months of wondering if she would be chosen. 12 months of thinking, well, there's no chance. But she keeps making it past to the next round, keeps getting a rose. And she starts to wonder if she, an orphan Jewish girl, could possibly be the next queen of Persia. So God is in the shadows when we find ourselves in seasons of waiting. I would say that the hardest part of God's will is often not the what, but the when. Like, you have a good sense of maybe what he wants to do, but boy, his timing doesn't match up with what your timing would be. And it hasn't happened yet, and you're starting to wonder if it's ever gonna happen. And there's a lot about God's will I don't understand, but God's timing seems to be some of the most challenging things. But I would just say, if you find yourself in a season of waiting, and maybe this will be a 12-month year of waiting for you, maybe this year is a waiting year in some way, I would just tell you, God doesn't waste the waiting. He's working in the shadows of the waiting, working behind the scenes. It can be a time of frustration, or it can be a time of anticipation. It all comes down to whether or not you have faith. So if you've been asking God, where are you? Maybe shift to that question. God, I know you're here. Help me see what you're doing. And finally, the big day arrives, and the time comes for Esther to go in to see the king. And he considers her the most beautiful woman in the land, and Esther wins the beauty pageant. Esther becomes queen, and we're going to discover that God puts Esther in a perfect position to change the course of history. He's in the shadows, keeping watch over his own. And what happens next? Okay, what happens next? It's kind of shocking, but you'll have to come back next week, or you could read the Bible on your own. That's also an option. One thing I want you to remember as we start this year: God is working to accomplish his purpose. Do not underestimate who he will use or what he will do or how he will work. And you may come from the wrong background, and you may come from the wrong family, and you may have made the wrong decisions, and from where you sit, you're not worthy, but you don't sit where God sits. And where God sits, he sees a daughter. Where God sits, he sees a son. And so you might go into this year feeling disqualified because of your past mistakes, overlooked because of your circumstances. You might feel frustrated because of the waiting, or uncertain because of the season you're in. But you remember Esther, this orphan girl, a foreigner, that is perfectly positioned for God to accomplish his purpose. And maybe, the very thing you think makes you unqualified and unlikely is the very thing God will use in your life to accomplish his purpose. Maybe that job you think is beneath you, maybe that marriage you've given up on, maybe that family of origin you came from, all of these strikes you think are against you, maybe that's your Persian palace, the very place God has positioned you for impact. And this week, I wanna ask you to do something specific. As we start this year, as we begin the series, I want you to write down your strikes. You just pick 3. You can put it in the notes on your phone. You can pull out a piece of paper and do it before you go to bed. But just write down three strikes. It shouldn't be that hard. Maybe something you think disqualifies you, maybe circumstances that you can't control or a situation that's just caused you so much frustration and creates a lot of fear in your life. Three strikes. And then I just want you to write two words next to each strike. Two words. But God. Dot, dot, dot. Strike number one, but God. Strike number two, but God. Strike number three, but God. And then let's just see throughout the course of this year how God works in the shadows, keeping watch over his own. Let's pray. God, would you give us faith to see how you're working even when we don't see it and even when we don't feel it. God, we read the story in the Old Testament, and in some ways it doesn't feel like it's like any of our stories, but in some ways it is like all of our stories. And so I pray, God, as we enter into this year, that you would give us faith in your presence, in your power. I pray, God, that you would give us a spirit of confidence in your sovereignty and in how you're working things together for good. I pray, God, that you would give us a spirit of humility and surrender, that we would let go of things that we're just really scared to let go of, and we would trust you to give you all the pieces. And I pray that you would write some but God stories within this room. As we look at the strikes against us, they would not be indicators of what's not possible, but they would be indicators of what you can do, your power that can be displayed in us and through us. I pray, God, that you would bring that into our lives as we surrender to you and as we live for your purpose, not just our plans. It's in Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks for listening. If today's message made you realize you need to take your next step with Jesus, we would love to help you with that. You can connect with us on any of our social media platforms throughout the week or visit our website at southeastchristian.org. And if you want to hear more content like this, you can check out our sermons podcast or our One at a Time podcast. Both can be found everywhere podcasts are available. Have a great week.